come forward if you're going to be here anyway, to come up to the speaker microphones in case we need you. We'll try to call on you at an appropriate time. I don't want to make you keep running back and forth. So if Dave Marshall and our police officers and other gun people could come forward, we'll go into this. And if we have the committee has any questions, we have some good resources to ask this time, unlike the last time we had a work session. All righty. Right. Just as a knowledge, we're going to end here at 4 o'clock, so we're going to have to try to hurry. We're going to try to work through council's outline of all the proposed amendments and move through most of these. Brand new copy of a brand new bill come our next meeting, which will be the latter part of next week.
It will be some evening next week to be decided by the committee. Did you guys hear me? Some evening next week to be decided by the members of the committee.
Say what now?
We have to meet in the evening next week.
If the committee should so desire.
The committee should so desire to meet next week. We need to meet in the evening because the Senate bills are starting to catch up with us and we're losing flexibility and schedule.
We're just going to hold all those buttons.
No comments.
Council, yes. Where were we at in these in your outline of amendments that we need to make here?
We were, I believe, on page two.
Page two.
Let me just update page three.
Page three.
For the committee's information, you were all provided with copies of the dash three amendments. What those are what the dash three amendments contain were the amendments adopted by the committee at the last hearing. They had to do with three areas, primarily changing the proof of identification to two pieces of ID, one of which must bear a photograph. It had to do with clarifying language pertaining to having been convicted of a felony or found guilty except for insanity, with a ORS citation to clear up that confusion. And the other thing that was done in the dash three amendments was to insert some language and delete some language in the study part, which has to do with the fingerprint language, removing the requirement of the fingerprints, and actually as a result of that, some other language from the original printed bill was deleted since we were taking out the fingerprints. Because the committee moved section 12, which was the definition section, to section 1, the dash 3 amendment sections don't match the printed bill. So I think for purposes of our work session today, I mean, as much as you can use the two documents side by side, it would be helpful, but the numbers on my working document match the original bill. And by the next work session, I will have this renumbered
in
the way that we're going. I just haven't had a chance to conform the working document to the dash three amendments yet. But are you guys following me so far?
Okay.
Somebody's original section by section summary
matches my working document section number.
Okay.
And the dash three amendments
don't
change the sections only because we renumbered them all. But it shouldn't be hard to do that. Now,
Council, if you could, go ahead and take us to where we left off and lead us into some of our proposed amendments off of your worksheet.
Okay.
Which worksheet?
The working document prepared dated May the 2nd. And if we need an extra copy, we have
No, that's fine. I've got it. There's nothing new in front of us this morning other than the dash three amendments.
That's not yet. No. Correct. All right. I think the easiest place to start. Let's do some simple stuff. If the committee will turn to page 4 of the working document, you'll see a number of proposed technical amendments. A lot of them have to do with how things will be mailed. The language on page 2 of the bill talks about when you are applying to purchase a handgun and the what level of mail service has to go back and forth. You'll note, for example, first-class mail is to be inserted. They want a certified mail requirement and some of those things. So we can go through these line by line if you want, but I think let's get some of this technical stuff out of the way, and then we can do some other stuff, if that's okay. Everybody
on
board?
Am I looking off the right sheet that you made, or just?
No, I would go to this. I think this would be easier. You need another copy?
Yeah, I want you to get that.
Can we get an extra copy of the May 2nd document for our chair?
Proposed amendments.
Representative Minnis, do you have a copy of that?
I do.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's start easy and then no.
Let's move up here from the top. We've got.
I'm going to start on page 4, and then we'll probably go back to page 3, but let's just do it this way, I think, for now. As I said, there were a lot of issues raised about levels of mail. So you'll see, first of all, on page 2, line 4, insert the words first class before postage to ensure that it's first class mail. Representative Bryan might want to just do a summary of why. I think a lot of this was his suggestions. He might want to just summarize why he felt the mail, the level of mail or the officialdom of the mail service be included in here.
Oh, just that we didn't specify what type of mail. We didn't want people using second or third class or bulk mail or some other means dropping it in along with a bulk mailing. But first class postage delivers, theoretically guarantees delivery in a timely fashion. And
there's a presumption in law that if you mail something, it gets delivered too.
Right. Oh, it is. That's, I just felt we should be more clear on it. It's not a big thing to describe.
Is that going to be, are there any concerns of people here? Is that adequate, the first class mail, or should it be certified? Do we have any?
Well, the denials and the information that's coming back, the disqualifications, the denials, and this will come out throughout, the things that are going in to the public agencies are all going first class. Anything that's coming back that's an official document that gives you notice of a denial or a disqualification or something will come back by certified mail. So we've set up sort of a two-tiered approach. Things going in are by public or by first class mail. Things coming out that are going to affect you are going to be by certified mail.
Okay, then I think we'll take it as a motion. I think we, from Representative Bryan, what is on our proposed amendments, lines 1 through 5, dealing with first class mail on the way out and by certified mail on the way back.
Okay, so that'll be line 4 and line 5, and line 4 and line 5 of page 4 of my document. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any objections to that as an amendment? It's adopted.
Okay. The next issue that was raised has to do with the numbers of days that were allowed. There's a understanding that the days are calendar days. I felt that, and I think it was discussed and there was consensus that it was important to clarify that it was calendar days, so people would know specifically how many days they had. So on lines 2 and on 12 and 17, I mean, it's a big difference between, if it's not calendar days, then that gets increased to 2 weeks, to 3 weeks and 4 weeks, and so that it's a simple amendment. It just makes it clear.
Okay, any objection to calendar days? Adopted.
Okay.
Let's go on. The next one's a little bit stickier.
The next recommendation that was made, if you look on page 2, line 26, it says, currently notwithstanding the provisions of paragraphs A, sub A, da-da-da-da, the seller may deliver a handgun at the time of a sale to a person holding a valid concealed handgun license issued by the state. And there was language proposed that the following be inserted, or to a person identifying himself as a police officer as defined by ORS 181.610 sub 6. Originally, there are probably, oh, I don't know, I think I've counted 10 recently, definitions of peace officers, police officers, law enforcement officers, any number of things in throughout the statutes. What is, I think, comprehensive enough, I think this amendment came from Representative Minnis, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think this might be one of Representative Breyer's amendments.
No, it's mine originally. Someone had stated about police officers, and I felt it should be limited to full-time police officers because around the state, reserves and part-timers have different levels of training and so forth, shall we say.
Simply stated, we're giving police officers an advantage.
Correct.
Well, yeah, I guess the rationale would be that, you know, we're trying to guard against felons, et cetera, and by being a full-time police officer, there's a presumption that they are not in the prohibited classes.
Let me just point out that this definition says all officers and members of law enforcement units who are employed full-time as peace officers, so that would include your Port of Portland police, your school police, and I think there are two or three other citations within that statute.
And we're letting them avoid a waiting period to purchase a handgun.
Similar to, Mr. Chairman, it would be similar to those who have concealed weapons permits. Puts them in that class.
Any concerns from anybody in our panel about...
I have a question in regards to the word full-time. I understand what employed means, and at least I'm assuming that's in a paid category or that they're police officer. Full-time, I'm not sure, has a definition, and one of the things that I think we need to be aware of in law enforcement, considering the changing population of who police officers are, there's an increasing contingency of women employed as law enforcement officers, and as a result of that, there's also a lot of different leaves of absence that are taken, for maternity leaves, for parental leaves, for different types of things. And I guess my question is if there's a timeshare, job share kind of a program for a police officer that's developed, whether or not a job share program would qualify as full-time employment as opposed to part-time employment. I don't want to create a glitch for that little scenario there.
Make this also apply to the job sharing?
I just think if somebody is employed as a police officer, the assumption is that they're on a paid basis, trained, they meet BPST certification standard. To me, that's sufficient as opposed to trying to put full-time. Whereas a reserve officer is not a paid employee. They're a reserve deputy or a reserve.
The problem is that actually this is the BPST's definition, and I think that if someone were working on a job share kind of basis, they could argue that for them it was full time. I mean, I see the point that you're raising. Conceivably, we could find another definition that would cover the same group, but I think they wanted people that were employed and being paid, and so.
It's probably maybe not an issue you want to get into now, maybe for another session or something. Population there that are working in that field.
There are a lot of definitions, but this one seems to be the best and the most comprehensive for that which this group wanted to do. And so if we come up with a better one, I can look.
You almost have to say regularly.
Regularly. Yeah, you don't want to get into that in here.
I think maybe just for the purpose of the record, you know, the intent
That's
is
That's a
not
good
to
idea.
Limit.
Just make your record clear and I'll leave it.
Any comments from anybody in the panel? I think everybody's supportive of this. Any objection to the amendment? It's adopted.
Okay.
Let's move on to the next one.
The next issue was raised on page 2, line 40. This is actually current law, but it states that when a handgun is delivered, it should be unloaded and securely wrapped. There was a recommendation that we delete and securely wrapped since no one was able to come up with an adequate definition. So you would just delete the last three words of the sentence.
Anybody understand that? Any objection? Adopted.
Okay. Page 2, lines 41 and 42. Basically, currently it says a violation of this section by any person engaged in the business of selling, leasing, or otherwise transferring is guilty of a Class C felony. It was recommended, I think, and this amendment came out of the working group, that the language that's on lines 17 through 20 on page 4 of the working document be inserted instead. If the intent is the same, it just, I think, accomplished the purpose better. And I think ahead, also because of the reference in other places to the federal statute, it makes a cleaner bill.
You know, could you refresh my memory as to what the language is that was finally agreed to? Is it the missed? It's on.
In person, do you want a copy? Do you need an extra copy of this?
Yeah, I need an extra copy.
There's tons of them. Any person engaged in the business as defined in 18 U.S.C. 921 of selling, leasing, or otherwise transferring such firearm who intentionally violates this section, and actually that was increased. I mean, the level of criminality went up to intentional from knowingly violates this section is guilty of a Class C felony. The other change in there was to raise the criminal intent level from knowingly to intentionally.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Nichols.
If I may, I thought we were going to take out subsection 6, lines 36 through 39, because every dealer who has a decal on his window that advertising himself as an authorized Colt dealer, Ruger dealer, whatever, has a facsimile of a handgun on the decal, and you're now making it a Class C felony to put a sticker on his window.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nichols, if I could just address that. I was going to leave that issue to a different point in the sense that that has been raised at the committee level. That's current law, and so the committee's going to have to decide.
Is there
that's a separate issue. That's lines 27, 28,
advertising.
29. That's the advertising issue.
37.
But that is current law, yeah. And so, and actually that was not raised at the meeting that generated this. That has come up subsequently.
And, Representative Clyde.
I guess I apologize for raising the issue. When I originally read the bill, I did not read that as existing law. I read that as part of the bill and came unglued because it's so clearly unconstitutional. And I'm sorry that it's an existing law, but it is still clearly unconstitutional, and nobody who knows anything about the Oregon Constitution will tell you otherwise. Some people will say, shut up, don't raise the issue, don't stir the waters, but I mean, sorry about that, it's unconstitutional.
May I ask a panel of, I guess, especially the law enforcement representatives, whether they have an objection to the deletion of that, if that's a critical issue or not?
It's one of two ways we can either take it out.
It's not critical to us. Yeah,
it seems like
to
it's
it.
Not like people don't know where they can buy guns. I don't know why we should restrict that.
We could either take it out, or when the session's over, we call the ACLU and they'll file a lawsuit and have it taken out for us.
Well,
I mean,
I understand the council's point, but since we're here and if there's a consensus, let's do it.
It was not intentional on my part to skip it. It came up subsequent to this. And
get a representative minutes, but if we do it, the Representative Clark's.
Clark says, indicates that this is unconstitutional. Just chapter and verse, please. Where is it unconstitutional?
Section 8.
Talking about Article 1, Section 8?
Yeah, freedom of expression. And as you know, Representative, I don't necessarily agree with what the Oregon Supreme Court says Article 1, Section 8 means, but they're the ones wearing the black robes, banging the gavels. And no, I... Yeah, it's a free speech issue.
Totally legal. I have no problem with it. It doesn't bother me. So.
You can always try to hook this on with the new dancing amendment over the Senate.
It's hooked.
No concealed weapons.
Did we get ropes?
If there's no objection to the amendment of deleting lines, or deleting that section of the law, which is ORS 166.430, which is...
Well, that's my good quote from yesterday.
Which is conceptually 37, 38, and 39 on page 2. There being no objection, that amendment adopted.
Deleted, right?
Right.
Deleted.
No. We need to go back, however, to line 17 through 20 of page 4. And I don't think there was a motion on deleting lines 41 and 42 and inserting the new language that was suggested on 17 through 20.
Okay. Council, I'm getting lost here a little bit.
We
now.
Skipped over. Mr. Nichols, I don't think we moved.
We were looking at lines 41 and 42 and inserting the other language.
We was, and Mr. Nichols brought us back up to 20, 37, 38, 39, so now we have to go back to 41 and 42.
Chair, I'd move to strike lines 41, 42, page 2 of the bill, and...
Fine, let's have counsel explain it to us because we're one short of taking any action right now. Lost our quorum. So.
Oh, as you say, and then replace it with line 17 through 20 of docking.
Let's have counsel explain this amendment to us thoroughly because I'm still a little bit unquestioned as to what it means. Maybe we can get some comments from the panel before we move it.
I think the panel can probably better explain it than I.
This one, we're trying...
Many persons engaged in the business as defined as...
I think that's the key. We're adding a definition of who the people are, and that's defined by the U.S. Code.
Let's see here. I know what you're talking.
That's all.
I
think we're adding. We're doing two basic things. We're adding an element of intent. We're saying intentionally, and then we're also making it a felony as opposed to a misdemeanor.
Correct. And we're also mirroring the federal language, which a lot of the bill does.
That's not it anyway.
So we're basically doing three things.
Mr. Chairman, are we on page 4 of the
proposed amendments?
Proposed amendments.
We're on page 4 of the working document, yeah.
Page 4 of the working document.
Yes, right. We're on page 4 of the working document.
We're working off of what lines? Council's...
Lines 16 through 20.
This is the dash 3 amendment.
This is the council's working document, 347. Do you have one of these?
A second.
That's what we asked.
Well, I've got this.
That's what we're working off of.
Okay, page 4.
I'm trying to fit it into the
day. Right. Page 4, lines 16 through 20.
It's sort of like a jigsaw puzzle. It does all fit together.
We're just going to play with the pieces, and then we're going to get a whole thing when we come back and try it again.
Fits into the bill as it was
originally. The original bill, it doesn't fit into the dash 3 amendments yet. It will by the time next time we meet. All right, we have our quorum back, so does someone want to...
We have our quorum. Do
we have any comments? We were still trying to explain or have this amendment explained to us, if possible. The intent here is to increase, the change from the present bill is to increase the culpable state to intentionally,
right.
Whereas presently, what's the culpable state in the bill?
It's silent.
There isn't one.
There isn't one.
And we're also at the same time making it a Class C felony.
Well, the bill does that. The new language does that. But we're also, I think, just mirroring federal language.
In terms of the definition?
In terms of the definition. It's not a significant change. I think it just cleans up, okay. Just replaces current language in the statute with new language that the bill is basically adding in.
Let me see if somebody can answer this one. I understand that why we should put a culpable state in the bill. That makes sense.
Particularly for a class C felony.
Particularly for if we're going to make it a felony. But what's the, and I've had to do a lot of that research in some of the statutes where there isn't a culpable state, and that's always a real pain in the rear.
What's the reason for making it a felony as opposed to making it a misdemeanor?
The working group, I think, came to the decision that all seller violations would be Class C felonies, all buyer violations would be Class A misdemeanors. And I think that was just a policy decision.
Anybody have any problem with that?
And I think, in the way that the amendments come out, I think that the culpable state was increased to intentionally on all of them, given the fact that we were looking at Class C felonies.
That makes sense.
Am I saying that accurately? I'm seeing some heads nodding. Okay. I think they felt it was appropriate that they be increased on the seller's part, but that at the same time the threshold culpability state needed to be increased as well.
Nobody.
I would, Mr. Chairman, move deletion of lines 41, 42 of the bill and replace with lines 17 through 20 of the working document, page 4.
Any objection? Adopted.
Okay, page 3 of the printed bill, line 16. Again, a recommendation about just mailing and inserting first class.
Move it.
Any objection? Adopted.
Page 3, line 21. It reads misdemeanor. It should be a Class C felony. That was just a oversight when they were when they revised the bill.
Do we have the intent language in here again? Are we using intentional or do we? I haven't.
Well, this is just the form. So what really this does is reflect the language that you've added back in there. It just makes it, puts it on, states on the form that violation of what you're doing is a Class C felony.
Okay. That makes sense. Any objection? Adopted.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Maddox.
While we're getting into page 3 of the printed bill, I had a general concern that I wanted to share with the committee.
Can I be rude?
Thanks.
We have about 3 more real technical amendments in Section 1 that I...
Well, this is... I'm dealing with Section 1.
Okay.
And it just has to do with the fact that we print this form 3 times over in the law. And I know that the current permit law even prints the form twice. Here's the original. Here's the duplicate. I'd like to suggest that... And I will move that we amend the bill... so that we simply say there has to be an original, a duplicate, and a triplicate, and that all three of them will have the following language, and you show the language once in the law, and then to the extent that we're going to show anything different on any one of the three pages, and as I recall, we have a thumbprint to be put on the third page, the triplicate, that we simply indicate that the triplicate shall also contain the following. We will save thousands of pages of paper in the next 2 years if we, by that simple change.
Representative Mannix, if we keep moving in this direction, we in layman can start reading statutes, we may put a lot of lawyers out of business. Got to be careful about that. Let's, we'll counsel, do you understand anyway. Conceptually what Representative Mannix is trying to do? Any comments from the from our panel helpers? I think it's just cleanup stuff for the most part. Do we still, Representative Mannix, did I sense you had a concern about having the three copies and maybe we should just go with the two?
No, just one. Now we just tell them that the form, I don't mind the form being triplicate. We can specify that it's triplicate. We're talking about where the original duplicate and triplicate goes. I could not understand when I read the bill. Then I went back to the current law and I saw why. Why we have to state what the first page of a form shows and then restate it all over again for page two and restate it all over again for page three in the law.
So if I understand Representative Mannix's amendment correctly, he wants the original in there with the what should be on two and three that makes it different from one solely noted.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And in fact, while we're at it, I would do the same for the concealed handgun permit.
I hope that Legislative Council is listening.
Actually, it looks like we don't even restate it each time for the concealed handgun, which is the way it should be.
Maybe there's other language to deal with it too, but there is, you know, some difference where on the original it says this original is for your files. If spoiled, making out, blah blah blah. Whereas the duplicate says notice to dealers, this carbon duplicate must be mailed the evening of the day of the sale. You know, and then the triplicate says notice to dealer, this carbon is a triplicate and must be mailed the evening of the sale.
Yes, also, my the intention of my amendment is to have the law just state what has to be on all three pages and then say the original page shall also contain this, the duplicate shall also contain this, the triplicate shall also contain this. But I'm not kidding when I talk about how many times are the ORS statutes going to be printed up, how many pages of unnecessary pages are we creating out there just because we think people are too dumb to understand it. I'm stating the policy now. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
It seems to me, if I'm not mistaken, these forms are printed by the Attorney General's office and provided to dealers. So in actuality, what you're doing is giving direction to the Attorney General on how to print their forms. Is that an accurate? I mean, most people don't print their own forms. They buy them.
State printer in this
state
case.
Printer does them. So the state printer ought to be able to figure out what to do.
I don't have any problem with the amendment at all. Does anybody have any problem with this? Just clear. Okay. Representative Mannix moves his conceptual amendment with respect to the forms. Any objection? Adopted.
Thank you.
Counsel, you're...
Got it.
There was one other thing, since we're backing up for a second. There was, just for fun, just one little thing in here. We were talking about whether the form should be sent back to the person and if there should be any criminal penalty.
I'm saving that for the end.
We're going to save that. Okay, let's... Why don't we save that until the end?
We'll get there. Let's just finish.
Okay.
I'm getting there.
Counsel, take us to the next amendment.
Okay. Page 3, line 36, it has been suggested that that information, that all this weapons-specific information be deleted. I don't recall where that recommendation came from.
Who wants to delete?
Renfro.
Renfro. Excuse me, did you say all of the information would be...
That's what I have. That's what my notes reflect. And I don't remember where that came from. No?
I think it would be important that information be retained for the following reasons. One, it would give the local agency an opportunity to check on the weapon itself, and also to determine if it might be associated, and I think this is in the bill, associated with... any particular crimes at the time, or if it's stolen?
I don't know where it got on the list.
Representative Minnis.
One other issue that I like to bring up on when we're talking about serial numbers and makes and models. Sometimes gun owners have inscribed their driver's license number or some other number on the weapon. I don't know. Maybe you can answer the question. should we take down that kind of information, too, if it's present on the weapon, if they describe their driver's license number?
Mr. Nichols.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, John Nichols. One of the problems you run into there is that some companies, Smith & Wesson comes to mind, put part assembly numbers on various parts, and so you could wind up with a lot of numbers. Unless law enforcement has an objection, I don't think it's a big issue on that type of thing. I would defer to them, however.
Of course, in most cases, you're not going to have that kind of a number present at the time of sale, unless it's a second purchase or something. So forget that. I think there may be another section of the bill that's more appropriate to talk about it.
Leave line 36, then.
Anybody that can give us any merit to this section, to this proposed amendment? Anybody that would make even the boldest arguments in favor of
Mr. Chairman, that might apply very well to the purchase or trade for the used weapon portion of the bill, and that very well might fit that, rather than the new weapons.
Right.
I don't get any sense from the committee that this is a deal with, so we'll see if somebody wants to lobby us and tell us why that's important.
The first one you can ignore.
Council, is that the...
Yeah.
Representative...
It might not look exactly like that, but we'll get it.
I guess I want to ask a question of staff, too, in terms of the kind of study that they're looking at. I guess I would advocate that they're required to destroy the information within 10 days after receipt. And the reason that I say that is because for the purpose of the study, we don't need people's names, addresses. They can take the statistical information in terms of demographics, age, race, whatever income levels, whatever it is that they're trying to ascertain. And they don't need the names, addresses, and so on and so forth. And if they're going to break it down by region of the state or locale or so on and so forth, once they've taken that information, statistical data off of the report, there's no reason for them to keep it going.
I agree with that friendly amendment.
How different is a friendly amendment?
Sure.
Let's try, and if it doesn't work, we'll come back and try it again.
Okay.
Mr. Nichols had his finger up there.
Mr. Nichols, do you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I presume this will still allow the police to keep records that are necessary for criminal prosecutions.
Yes.
They would not be...
That goes without saying.
Well, I think we should specify...
May I, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Mannix.
We should specify as an exception, if the police note upon receipt of the document that there's a need for that document for purposes of criminal prosecution, that they just advise whoever transmitted the document to them that they are not destroying that document.
Well, yeah, but we can...
I want some procedure where they can't just say, well, we're keeping all of this for possible criminal prosecution. They should identify a particular document that they've set aside for purposes of potential prosecution.
That intent should also be noted in the conceptual amendment.
Major Renfro had his hand up.
Major Renfro, have a comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, it would be particularly important that copy with the fingerprint that positively identifies the individual be retained.
Evidence at that point.
Well, but I want it to be designated as such to be some record that this is why this wasn't destroyed. You know, this is evidence of someone who's trying to fraudulently purchase a weapon.
Forms may be retained.
Mr. Representative Mannix, I thought you wanted to shorten the ORS. It's not like...
Mr. Marshall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mannix, in pursuing that, it's been brought to my attention that we're providing for the destruction of those records, but there's not a confidentiality attached to those. So, in fact, pending in the interim of the two-year study, there's nothing to preclude someone, since those are our public records now, to go in and the newspaper, for instance, to secure that information and publish it in the newspaper the day before the study ends. I think that we ought to make sure that these records are confidential for the purposes of the study, and then attendant with the destruction after the study.
Mr. Chairman,
would that be acceptable?
I think that makes a whole lot of sense. My guess is that you probably would have to amend the public records law to do that.
Mr. Chairman?
I will pursue this motion.
We can also put in then that notwithstanding the public records law, these records are not to be kept as public records.
Notwithstanding all of the Oregon revised statutes.
Okay, let's.
All right.
And I think council has a pretty good idea.
They're destroying them within 10 days. You're outside when they agreed to do that.
I don't think there's any other comments. Good.
Now we need
council,
to.
Council has a good idea what this conceptual amendment is. Council, could you restate the conceptual amendment that you're going to draft for us that we're going to adopt?
I'd be happy to. That.
If you happen to miss something and leave it out, we're sure that the legislative intent will be reflected on the record. So
I don't mind giving her a break if we can all agree that we understood where we picked up on this conceptual amendment. I'm perfectly happy with it as we've arrived at it.
Well,
that's right with the chairman.
That it's unlawful to do. It's unlawful to compile the information that any public employee who intentionally violates a section is guilty of a Class C felony. That a private right of action shall be created with attorney's fees if you prevail. Notwithstanding the public records law and notwithstanding the study that the documents, if possible, will be destroyed as soon after they are transmitted to the state police.
Within 10 days.
For their purposes. Well, if for some reason I find out that they're not going to turn them over in 10 days, I will come back to the committee and say it may not be.
Okay.
That at the completion of the study, all records must be destroyed.
Within a time, within 10 days or 30 days.
For purposes of clarification, counsel, I think ledge counsel needs to understand that the private right of action would be a private right of action for enforcement of this section. And it would be my intent, and I kind of drift off into fuzziness here, but it would be my intent to declare as a matter of legislative intent that this would be the functional equivalent of a civil rights violation. And I just went and looked at chapter 670 or whatever it is. It gives the Bureau of Labor and Industries all kinds of enforcement authority over the civil rights claims and employment and discrimination and all sorts of things. And I don't think that's where we want to put this. I can't imagine what Bureau of Labor and Industries has to do with this. That's the closest thing we have in this state to a statutory civil rights sections, enforcement sections. So we may have to create something that doesn't exist anywhere else, but it's also going to be, just for the committee's knowledge, going to be my intention to move this same amendment any place in the bill where there's a potential for abuse.
Mr. Chairman,
if
Mr.
the public
Mr.
body wrongfully withholds a concealed weapons permit, that's also a violation of civil rights.
Mr. Chairman, I would think that what we may want to do is to have Representative Clark's conceptual amendment be for this entire 1989 act.
Thank you.
That there be
a
private.
That's entirely my point.
That there be a private right of action for violations under this 1989 Act, and that, first of all, by having specified there be a private right of action, you don't have to parallel to civil rights. You can say there's a private right of action against anyone who violates the provisions of this 1989 Act. Second of all, the person who prevails in that proceeding, you may want to say the plaintiff in that proceeding may recover attorney fees. I'm tempted to say the person that prevails, because that means if someone wants to file a nuisance lawsuit and they lose, they're going to have to pay the other side. We'll have to debate that later. But I would agree with having that as a separate section that we could address.
Okay. I think
do we want to make that part of the conceptual amendment, or
got it?
Let's make it part of it. I want the conceptual amendment to say petitioner can collect attorney's fees. And
okay.
Petitioner would be the person that files for the permit or what have you, and not the government, vice versa.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Everybody have some inkling of what the conceptual amendment's about.
Yes.
We're going to see it again and work it some more if we have to. Any objection?
Okay, now,
Mr.
Chairman.
Representative Bryan raised another issue that he sort of stuffed in here but has come up a couple of times and the committee should probably address next, which would be adding on to, at the end of line 20 on page 2, that the triplicate shall be returned. I mean, we need some language, but the triplicate shall be returned to the, what do we decide? How do you want to do this?
Well, I think we And the working group talked about sending it back to the gun dealer. Now, we'd all have to give notice to the local agency to know what the situation is or found. But the idea is that the original application of thumbprint goes back to the gun dealer. And the purchaser, when it comes in on the 16th day, to pick up the firearm, handgun, if he...
Send it back to the gun dealer and make it available to the...
How do people know we're not keeping these? It's an administrative issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix, I think I'm ready to accept Representative Bryan's motion. If
so am I.
Good.
I was just going to say I support it.
Any objection to the conceptual amendment?
All right, so the triplicate...
Major Renfro.
Major Renfro, you have a comment on this amendment?
Chairman, I just have one comment that does concern me, is that when the state police returns that to the dealer or whoever, we would have a responsibility to notifying the local agency. If we don't do it by sending that particular form back, that means a duplication of some type, which means there's another document out there with that information on it, and with the name of the individual and so forth. So for simplification purposes, I would prefer to see that original document remain, whether it be routed through the original agency or what, be confined to just one document.
What was the idea of sending it back to the agency again?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryan, for the purpose of letting them know what the criminal history is, whether there is a record pertaining to the individual or no record.
How about this?
There isn't a place on the form that says there's no space for your response anyway.
No, but that would, Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryan, that would probably be stamped on the form somehow.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Minnis and Representative Mannix.
I guess I'm wondering, since the state police is given responsibility to do the thumb check analysis, why we're bifurcating the process and letting the sheriff's department do a portion of it or the police agency do a portion of it. Why doesn't the state police do the whole nine yards, since you have access to the same records that we have access to?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Minnis, we had discussed that in the working committee, and it was felt that a more complete background investigation could be done on a local level with the local agencies.
I guess maybe, Mr. Sheriff, I could. I guess I'd like to argue that I don't agree with you, and we create the problem that you just raised of having different information in different locations. I know the state police have a headquarters office in East Multnomah County in southeast Portland, and they're oftentimes interfacing with the Portland Police Bureau, the Sheriff's Department there. And I don't see any reason why, if you've got certain information that you need, a PPDS record or a CRIS record or any of those things, that you can't request it and get it. You're going to get the same depth of information that you're going to get from our agency. I mean, I don't see how you're going to get a better investigation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Minnis, I agree with that. However, there's one additional thing. When we discussed this, we were looking at for positive forms of identification, which that was the reason for using the General Headquarters ID Bureau. And then many of these cases would probably take more than just identifying the individual and would have to go into localized investigations and so forth in the localized agencies. And state police could do that, but I'm certain that it would involve many more hours, many more personnel to complete this.
I think you missed the drift, Major. I think Representative Minnis, if I may, was saying, no, why not just have the local police agencies do this and not have the state police do it? Did I misunderstand?
I was going the other way.
I was
thinking this. The state police have access to NCIC LEDs and all the local information that any local police department is doing. We're bifurcating all of the information, creating duplicate records in different agencies and duplicate requirements, and I don't see any reason not to give the onus to you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, potentially we have access, but not in every case. We don't have necessary access unless we, from headquarters, then transport or send the particular information to our local office, then they might have a closer or more of a computer access and so forth on a local level. we don't have that computer access from the general headquarters level, and I'm afraid it would just complicate it to the point where we'd have to not only involve local agencies, but involve our local state police offices.
I didn't realize you weren't using the local outlets or outposts or whatever you call them in the state.
Representative Bryan.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, point of privilege, I'm still waiting to raise what I thought was a solution to this problem, the bifurcation problem. And that was, why not just have the state police send it to the local agency with, if there is a problem. But if there isn't a problem, then they send it to the handgun dealer. So if the handgun dealer gets it, okay. If they find something in their records that sets off an alarm, it goes to the local police, who may well be running out to arrest this person anyway.
That's in the bill already.
Well, then doesn't that solve the problem?
No, it doesn't.
All right.
President Bryan.
Okay, I think what we can do is, if you look at sub B lines 14 through 20, that requires the state police to return the triplicate within 10 days to the agency receiving the duplicate. And then the agency receiving the duplicate has an additional 5 days for a total of 15 to notify the dealer whether a purchaser is disqualified. And I think what we need to do is in lines 11 through 13 simply say that when the local notifies the dealer, they return the triplicate.
I think council misunderstood what I was suggesting, which was, and it's not in the bill because I just read it, and that was that the state police send it to local police if they found a problem, but instead, if they find no problem, they send it direct to the dealer. And you've just saved local police the time of having to review something and deliver it to the dealer. And I think 90% of the time, we're just going to save a step in the process. Here it says it shall be delivered to the agency that received a duplicate.
They have two different Mr. Chair, Representative Mattis, they have two different responsibilities. What the state police are responsible for doing and what the local police are responsible for doing are not the same. And so I don't think that you can cut out that middle step because there's a whole level of investigation that a background checking that is required of the locals under this bill.
If the locals don't hear from the state police, then they know there's no problem.
No, but the state police won't have the information necessarily that the locals are going to have. Therefore, you can't take that step out.
No, the locals may. No.
The locals
Mr.
are going
Chairman.
To have information that the state police might not have.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman?
Stop arguing now. Stop it.
Mr. Chairman. The locals will know from reviewing the duplicate and investigating whether they find a problem and they can act on it. If they haven't heard from the state police, they would have a right to assume that the state police, from their perspective, had not found a problem. If the locals find a problem, then they could contact the state police and say, well, gee, we haven't heard from you. Did you find nothing? And they can start communicating. But I'm trying to avoid unnecessary paperwork. Now, granted, in government, the absence of a document may not mean that they actually reviewed the matter and acted on it. It might mean the mail got screwed up. And maybe you want to decide anyway to send it through the sheriff's office. You can make that decision. That's my only comment. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, I like that idea, but the only problem I see or a problem I do believe could occur is, let's say the state police run the check, comes back clear. They, in turn, send the form back to the dealer. In the meantime, the local agency has not ran their check yet, and the dealer releases the weapon to the individual, and then something surfaces on a local level.
That the local law enforcement agency, when they're done doing their criminal check, simply
I faintly heard your comment, and I don't know. Are there any comments from law enforcement on?
Chairman, representing Minnesota, Sheriff Burks, the only problem I would have, that's another step that we would have to do. And you're talking about mailing it instead of allowing us to destroy it. And there's quite a cost if you mail all of that back.
I just have a real problem with these forms going all over the state to all the different... I know how those things work. I know how agencies work with people. Sometimes things don't get done. And I just.
That's currently the way it is today. It's in a lot of files currently.
It's
these folks. But if you require us to gather that all up and mail it to the state police, then they're going to have to do the very same thing that we would have just done.
Mr. Chairman? I think we're going to have to stick with the original bill, which is the state will send the triplicate to the agency which got the duplicate. The agency which got the duplicate will then get it to the dealer.
That's what I had.
That's what you were going to say.
That's what I had suggested earlier. Was that in B, lines 11 and 13, through 13? Is that the, it says the, let me ask a question, if I may, of Sheriff Burks. Is it your understanding that if you get from OSP a triplicate sheet and there's no problem indicated, and no problem comes up in your investigation, that you would not notify the dealer at all? Silence would imply, or silence would be approval? Is that what your intention is?
If I have not notified him within 15 days, silence would be approval. That was the intent of the group. If something happened, for some reason it didn't reach the dealer by the 15th day, he's off the hook and
that's
he can deliver the weapon.
Passing on the triplicate back to the dealer becomes the extra mailing.
Right.
Problem, do we think? I like your original amendment to have them.
Getting mailed back to the trip to the dealer, or if the triplicate's going to be mailed, it needs to go to the local agency so that they know that it's okay from, they need to know what the OSP found. Mm-hmm. They combine it with what they found, make a determination if there's disqualification or not. If there's a disqualification, they have to notify the gun dealer. As this written is written, is that if there's not a disqualification, they don't notify.
The plan is to try to get this thing back to the person that purchased the gun so that he's able to, the government isn't keeping these on file. Or if they're keeping it on file, at least it's a copy and not the original.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Sheriff Burks, it seems like you're kind of double-dipping us. You're saying if you do, but you don't do this, it's a felony, and then you also want to double insure and cost the government more money to send it back to the individual that was printed.
We're awful scared here, boy. I tell you, this committee just doesn't trust the government.
I've heard rumors that there is one agency in the state that may keep those type of records and use them for some ulterior purposes, but I don't think it's been demonstrated to this committee that that's in fact happening. I don't know of any place that that's actually happening or it's being used inappropriately. There's always a potential for abuse in anything when you have people.
Well, I guess I want to ask both gentlemen from the law enforcement community to ask, I mean, when we're done today, to ask your colleagues, superiors, inferiors, and counsel about the conceptual amendment that I threw out on the private right of attack, private right of action for violation, attorney fees, and calling this a civil rights violation. Because I think, first of all, that I'm sensitive to what you're saying, which is basically, hey, we're getting beat up on here, and we understand why we're getting beat up, but let's make this workable. And it seems to me that if we treat this like any other civil rights claim, then you know what universe you're in, you know what your exposure is, what your liability is. It shouldn't be scary. I mean, I hope you're not going to come back Tuesday and say, absolutely not, because that's going to tell me something then. And I think that that gets at a whole lot of potential for abuse, right? I think it cuts back on a whole lot of potential for abuse. The first time it happens, I just think it's going to solve that problem. So I guess I want to get your feedback, not just that you don't oppose that, but I'd like to get some sense that you think that's probably, that might be a good idea as a way to make clear what I believe you're telling us, which is that you're serious, that you don't plan on keeping these things around.
So. Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, when you mentioned civil rights, I think you strike fear in the hearts of police officers and
I think so.
Do not like it. And I can tell you right now, my colleagues will not like this added burden, if you will. But they'll damn well comply with it if it becomes law, because right. It is a civil rights violation.
Right. And you understand what it means.
Absolutely.
It's familiar territory to you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, in my opinion, a Class C felony certainly in addition to any civil penalty. Would cause us to take note and view this very seriously.
Thank you very much. Let's we'll try to revisit that little piece later, since we have to anyway. We don't have enough bodies to visit it now. But if and when we do, the notion of what we're looking at is somehow getting that form back to the individual, and whether or not that's doable. Or so, person knows I put my fingerprint on this form, and the government gave it back to me. Somehow I think that's going to make us feel a lot.
I think that's, Mr. Chairman, that is reassuring to the citizen, but it does add an extra cost and puts an extra step in the process.
Thank you very much. Let's move up our next amendment. Council, let's not forget to revisit that little piece.
The only thing I wanted to re-raise is based on, at the last hearing, the committee took out in the forms what Representative Mannix calls the laundry list of documents and changed it to two pieces of identification, including one bearing a photograph. And I just wanted to raise the fact that the committee had changed it, and then there was yesterday's hearing. So it's not on this list presently, but does the committee want to revisit that issue once again?
I forgot where we ended up yesterday.
Well, there was a lot of discussion about identification and what was good and what
I know
was
there
not
was.
Good. There was a recommendation, I think, made that in with the two pieces of ID, one be a government issue or something along those lines. There was a lot of discussion about identification and what's valid and what's not valid, but we have taken the laundry list that's in here currently and replaced it with two pieces of ID, two pieces of current ID, one of which must bear a photograph.
Sure. Question for the panel. We talked yesterday about the relationship between the ID required at the front side and eliminating the requirement for a thumbprint for long guns. And the speaker's comment was, there's a trade-off there, not a political trade-off, but a workability trade-off in terms of gathering some of the information. And I guess I want to get your thoughts again on that, the interrelationship there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, my personal thoughts are obviously we'd prefer to have fingerprints. However, if we do increase the number of identifications, that would certainly go a long way in making this a more accurate study and assuring that at least in most cases we are going to properly identify the individuals.
Would a driver's license we'll revisit this issue again briefly. The driver's license plus one other piece of government ID. How does that strike you? Does that get the job done?
Chair, Representative Clark, driver's licenses in Oregon are not very considered very valid for identification. However. If you include another piece of government identification,
other than Social Security
number,
right.
That would be of benefit. Maybe
I can't see that the driver's license hurts any, throwing in the requirement that it be there. I mean, it may not be reliable, but so I guess the place where I would tend to go to, given what we want to do on fingerprinting with long guns, would be to say two pieces of ID required, one of which bears a photograph and may be an Oregon driver's license, the other of which must be another government standard, some sort of government-issued ID.
What do you think about, excuse me, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
What do you think about that alternative on the on? Of course, we're changing the form then, or we're going to have two versions on the form, because for long guns, they were going to use the form for research purposes for 2 years. What's law enforcement's reaction?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, it's my belief that the more identification you have, the better. And I think I've said that previously, and I'm very suspicious of Social Security cards because they're very easy to get today, and driver's license can be very easily altered. And that we should have one other type of documentation, and we discussed that in our little working committee and gave you a laundry list, and I forget whether we said one or more of those laundry list items. We felt they were harder to forge or to falsify. So my view, if you had one of those other items, such as a birth certificate or naturalization card or one of those items with a driver's license, would probably be sufficient. I don't like the driver's license, but I think that's going to be improved.
Well, some of us have noted, for instance, Mr. Chairman, on documentation of origin, I guess it's not too hard to get a birth certificate. Naturalization, similarly, but you get into alien registration card, I guess some aliens are supposed to carry those, so they should have that pretty handy. Many of us have passports, but a lot of us don't. Military ID card, if you've been in the service. Aren't there some other kinds of cards that would help document origin that shows someone's been somehow checked out? Or, as an alternative, how about something that documents that you've been in that community for, say, 6 months, even though it's not as fancy a document?
I'm Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix. There are local documents, government documents, that I personally would not object to.
Can you give us the list?
Well, not immediately, but there may be some local county or municipal documents of some type that may be verified.
If I can, council's ready to move us into the next amendment. We'll leave this thing alone until the next time. I have a whole different set of feelings on this, and I might get a chance to just talk to some members of the committee. let's move on, just because this seems like one that'll take. We spent a lot of time on this last time, and
I agree, Mr. Chairman. Can I raise a quick separate issue in terms of paperwork?
Please, Representative Mannix.
I'm concerned about the amount of paperwork we're creating here, or that already exists here, and I'm wondering what anyone's reaction is to the idea of saying, look, you've gone to the dealer, you filled out this form, and you're cleared, and you purchased your handgun. How would you feel about saying that that dealer, with your permission, could keep on hand that triplicate for the next, say, 3 months, and should you decide to purchase another handgun or long gun during those 3 months, that he could still rely on that original application? It's for that dealer on hand, but you'd have to leave it with him, and you'd have to voluntarily agree to leave it with him, just so that if someone wanted to buy two guns in 3 months, they didn't end up having to send through two sets of forms, or maybe 6 months. I mean, some limited time frame, knowing that people can go out and commit mayhem within the next 3 months.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think I'd have any problem, Representative Mannix, I'd have any problems with that, except under the federal law, I think you're probably going to be required to fill out.
Okay, you've got to fill out the federal form, but